Welcome along. Oh, where is it? Oh, yeah, there's my button there. Sorry. Oh, yeah, welcome along. Sorry. I was looking for buttons there, but I couldn't find it. It is the end of the week, of course, and we like to do a little bit of a wrap-up. Last week, we started to do this. It's not suitable for broadcast. That's why we renamed it. Not suitable for broadcast. Joining me is my good friend, AJ Walsh. AJ, hi, how are you?
Hey, Niall, how are you?
Good. Glad to have you here again. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation last week and seemingly thousands of other people thoroughly enjoyed it as well. So we got some good reports. So hopefully we can keep up the same and inform people every single week of what, I suppose, the big stories are the ones that everybody's talking about and some of the lighter ones too. But the one I wanted to get to first, and I know we want to come to the biggest story of the week, obviously. When I say the biggest story, it's certainly one of those stories that travelled from the UK to Ireland about Henry Nowak. And we'll get to that story later on. But first, I was shocked when I saw this video yesterday. Ben Scallon asked the Minister for Children. Now, he had already preempted, she would say, I have no idea what you're talking about, Ben. So what he did was he sent her a press release before the actual press conference to make sure she was aware of what he was going to ask her so she could kind of do a little bit of research, you know. Mind you, she still pretended she had no idea what he was talking about. But it was in relation to a book called This Is Tea. And this book is recommended by RTE and by Children's Book, our Children's Books Ireland, during Pride Month, and aimed at 15-year-olds. The contents are, well, parts of the contents are how to have anal sex, how to clean that area of your body and evacuate anything that might be in there while you're at it, and how to use lubricant. And her answer to this, he asked her, was this not outrageous and inappropriate for a 15-year-old? And her answer constantly, over and over again, was she just wouldn't say it was outrageous. All she kept saying was, well, this is for parents to talk to their children about, you know, and to make sure their children are looking at appropriate stuff. And, you know, it's up to parents then to decide whether they believe that's appropriate for their child and yada, yada, yada. She just would not say it was wrong. Do you think that's wrong?
I do, personally. I think that's wrong. I think there's a massive difference between sex education and a how-to manual for aimed at under-18s and aimed at 15-year-olds. And I think parents have enough to be worried about without there being a book there giving them a how-to manual on how to have anal sex and normalising it for 15-year-olds, because it's not normal for 15-year-olds. It's no. Something that if you're older, if you're over 18, that's fine to go and explore. But giving a 15-year-old a how-to manual on how to have anal sex is completely inappropriate and something that parents don't need an extra thing to worry about. We're busy trying to get them off social media, never mind trying to get them away from books that are available, readily available, that they can get access to.
But what's even more shocking is, and she still wouldn't respond to, you know, was it appropriate for the national broadcaster and for Children's Books Ireland to recommend this book, this particular. Now, by the way, the author of this book has been in the spot of bother before in relation to books that he has written. This book is gay, I think, was the last book he brought out. I mean, there's a clear agenda taking place. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're gay, you're gay. You can get whatever how-to books you want to after you're 18 years of age. Once you reach 18 years of age, you can do whatever you want. That's your choice. You can decide whether you think it's appropriate or not. But if you're a child, we shouldn't be encouraging that kind of sexualization, just like the story, by the way, that was in the Irish Examiner during the week about the, it was the drag queen who's only 16 years of age doing the Leaving Cert. Now, they got a huge backlash to the 16-year-old that was dressed reasonably inappropriately, I suppose sexualized. And they removed the actual tweet because they got hundreds and hundreds of comments and very few likes. And there is a concern, too, when you're putting a 16-year-old who looks sexualized in drag online. You know, is that appropriate to even be putting online? So I think that's why they removed it. Anyway, but this whole idea that we're constantly sexualizing children or trying to sexualize children, it's a constant agenda all the time.
I don't understand why it's happening. They're trying to normalize this for children that are way too young to even be thinking about this kind of thing. It's also taken away rights as a parent, because your rights are being taken away because it is available to under 18s. So we don't have the right to go and say it. If it's in the library, you know, it's there for them to get, and it is taking our rights away because it's not in a place that is out of sight or out of the way of them to get their hands on it. I think on all levels, I think it's wrong. And I don't understand why they're trying to normalize this sort of sexual behavior for kids, basically.
If it's in the library, it should be in the over 18 section, which I remember, by the way, when we used to go to the library. I can't remember the last time I was in a library. I was probably 12 or 13 years of age. I haven't been in a library since. I don't even know that many people go to libraries anymore. I'm sure some people do. But they had the over 18 section. And there was an L one there called Mrs. I think her name was Hillshaw or something like that. She was a horrible woman. Anyway, but she was horrible to us because we weren't really that nice. But every time she turned her back or she'd go looking for somebody's card, we'd be sneaking over to the 18 section and trying to look at a few books to see if we could see a naked woman or something.
That's innocent, you know, and that's what it's about. But you didn't have manuals like that in the over 18 section, never mind the kids section.
No.
So yeah, all of that's innocent, and that's, and it's cute, and it's a nice memory, and you know, you were curious. Now you're curious. Look at the what you have to go and find now. You know, if you're curious, it's not innocent anymore. It's completely inappropriate what's available and easily available, readily available for kids.
Mm. It is quite shocking. There we go. We can hear myself there as well. Now, I suppose one of the big stories last week that we didn't get to discuss, and it kind of this conversation went on over the weekend, particularly when there was a match on last Saturday, and then one of the commentators start going on about Gaza, which, by the way, I think is completely wrong of RT Sport to be allowing a commentator to make political comments. That's not the place to make a political comment. If you want to make a political comment, go on Primetime or go on some other show. But anyway, this whole hoo-ha over the Ireland-Israeli match, which is on in October, and now you've Sinn Féin putting forward a motion, not, by the way, just to, well, some of the political parties are saying, not just to stop the match, but to ban the players, ban the officials, and ban the fans from actually entering the country.
So, yeah, I mean, again, I'm very much of the strong opinion that we should be separating politics and the likes of the Eurovision, the likes of sport. But I do think that it is heavily connected, unfortunately. So his comment wasn't out of place to bring it up.
Why? What do you mean it wasn't out of place? But it's RT Sport. It's not RT politics.
No, you're right. It's not RT politics, but they have always been connected. They have always been. And you can't say that it's not. I mean, it has had a strong connection forever. I don't agree with what he's saying. I don't think that it would make any difference boycotting the match. I don't think it will make any difference to anything in the grand scheme of things.
It's not going
to
save a life, is it?
It's not going to save anybody's life. It's not going to stop the war. It's not going to do anything. On the other side, people will say that, you know, we should be showing our support for one side or the other. Don't think it's the place.
Should we? Because I think we're coming across in Ireland as being a bunch of anti-Semites. That's just my own feeling. I get that impression, you know, this whole idea of changing the name of Herzog Park and all the stuff that we've been doing. And we're one of the first countries to recognise the state of Palestine. I know we're only a small country, we punch above our weight, etc. And now, of course, the Occupied Territories Bill, which they're pushing for, by the way, which could do a huge amount of economic damage to Ireland. You know, we're coming across as very anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I do think that we are coming across like that for sure. We're definitely coming out very strong in our support for Palestine, and I'm not saying that that's not okay, but it is coming across quite anti-Semitic, definitely. Especially now living in the UK and looking from the outside, I think we are for sure.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, for all those Egypts that are out there on social media, you know, calling me a Zionist or whatever you want to call me, I mean, I don't support the killing of innocent people. I think it's horrific to watch children being, you know, bombed or whatever it happens to be and losing limbs. And, you know, and I see those horrific pictures of fathers carrying their dead children. Like, it's horrific. It's awful. You know, and Israel should be ashamed of themselves for doing that, you know, and that kind of collateral damage. But equally, Hamas should be equally ashamed of themselves for terrorizing Israelis as well. So, you know, there's a pair of them in it. You know, it is a war. Yeah. It's a conflict. But here's the thing. What I care about right now, and if you look at, by the way, the polls from Ireland Thinks and a few others, when they ask people what they cared about, cost of living is right up there, healthcare is right up there, immigration, housing, all those things. Gaza is right down the bottom at like 4%. So people care about what's happening in their own country. And once we get our own house fixed, then we can start caring about other things in the world.
Yeah.
Is that selfish?
No, I don't think it's selfish. And I do agree with that. And I think that, you know, people worry about the cost of living because it directly affects them. People worry about that because it affects their kids. It affects their lives. It affects their lifestyle, what they can do. And I do think that that is We do need to look at home first, and then, like you say, worry about how we can help abroad. But I mean, other people will say that our voice does make a difference, and showing the support that the way that we have does make a difference. I personally don't think it does, and especially when it comes to something like the Eurovision, which is obviously happened quite recently, and we obviously boycotted that. And now to be boycotting sports games, I just don't think it's going to make any difference at all.
No.
It's all just
No.
symbolic. All just symbolic, and on the grand scheme of things, it won't make a difference. What I was saying before with sport being connected politically, sort of looking back at the apartheid era in South Africa, that was what I was really kind of thinking of, how big sport to make political statements back then. But did it really make a massive difference? Well, I suppose we're still talking about it now. So I don't know. There's two sides to that, Niall. You know, there's two
Yeah, I
sides.
mean, but where do you stop? Oh, sorry. Where do you stop? You know, like, and you know, Sinn Féin are talking about this new bill, you know, to obviously ban people coming in here from, you know, officials or players or fans or whatever it happens to be. So where does that all stop? Because should we ban all Americans from coming to Ireland just in case people disagree with Donald Trump's bombing of Iran? You know, I mean, where do you stop? Should we ban Russian citizens from coming to Ireland because we might not agree with Vladimir Putin and what he's done to Ukraine? So where do you stop with your banning, this constant banning all the time?
I think there's a difference between what happened with the situation with Israel and Palestine. I think there's a difference there. Whereas with America and Iran, there's actually a conflict. They're actually fighting against each other, and they're sort of like equal level. With Russia and
Well, you could
Ukraine,
argue
you could
Hamas
argue.
have attacked
Yeah,
her.
I think the scale of the backlash from Israel was far surpassed anything
Disproportionate,
that Hamas,
yes. Absolutely.
completely disproportionate. And I think
Absolutely.
that's the difference. And it's the inequality in that. I see. I wouldn't call that even a conflict. It was something completely different. I mean, I'm not going to come on saying it was an apartheid or anything like that. But it was certainly something different to any of the other conflicts that we're seeing right now.
What blows my mind is, you know, the individuals in this country on the left who are supporting Palestine. And don't get me wrong,
Don't get me wrong.
nobody would support the
Nobody would.
death of young children and innocent people. But, you know, these individuals, you know, are the same individuals who support LGBT and human rights and all that. And yet none of those rights are supported by the people they're actually supporting. Like, if you go to Palestine and you're gay, and we all know the stories of people being thrown off buildings, I'm not saying that happens to everybody, but they certainly don't support homosexuality, gay marriage, or same-sex marriage, or any of that. They don't support anything like that. They're actually completely against it. And yet, the same
Their values
individuals,
are definitely not aligned, that's for sure.
no, the same individuals supporting them in this war are the people that would be horrified by their moral values. I just find the whole thing quite hypocritical. And then, on top of that, then you have these flotillas, which is a daft idea. By the way, you know, it's like, let's go in another flotilla and get arrested and sent back home again. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it that does seem like a bit of a waste of time altogether, and the hassle and the drama is just, yeah. It just
Okay.
makes sense.
Would you look at that? Those headphones just magically appeared in your head. How did that happen, AJ?
like Britney Spears.
They just magically appeared. They were there a second ago. They just magically appeared. The technology is an amazing thing, isn't it? That it can actually do things
It
like
is. We're moving fast. We're
that.
moving
It's
fast.
superimposed on your head. Now, the other thing, by the way, I talked to Laura Perrins on the show, the journalist from Gripped Media, during the week, and we were talking about the massive decline in birth rates. I mean, it's really horribly declining now at this stage. I know David Quinn from my own institute put out statistics on it as well during the week. And, like, we were scared at 1.6, but now we're heading towards the 1.3 and 1.4, in between there somewhere. The replacement level is 2.3. We're way off replacement. We're not going to get back to that again. But the question, Laura, I was talking to Laura, is why is it happening? And she was blaming all sorts of things, like, oh, people can't afford a house and life is getting more expensive and yada, yada, yada. And I said, well, why can't you blame yourself? You women, feminism is what's killed or has absolutely everything to do with the decline in the birth rate. Would you not agree?
I definitely, 100% agree that feminism has affected the birth rate, because women are realizing that they don't have to have kids. They can actually have a career. They can have an education. They can go out and earn money, and they don't have to give up their lives. And I think that that's what women are realizing.
But
And
then,
why the hell would you want?
we're all doomed. Because, I mean, you did your bit. You had four of them.
Yeah,
See?
I know. And
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it was. It was like a hormonal thing, like, oh, I want to have kids. But like, I look at my friendless or my childless friends, and I'm like, oh my God, their quality of life is so much better.
Are you jealous? Are you like jealous of them because they've
A
no
little
kids?
bit, yeah.
Why? Because they can go on holidays and do whatever they want and get drunk whenever they feel like
They
it
can
and
do whatever they want. Yeah, they can afford whatever they want. Whereas I'm here, I'm like, everything's a struggle. I can't afford this. I can't afford that. Yeah, I am. And it's not that I didn't think that I could have a career or anything like that, or I never worried about the cost of housing or anything like that. But now I do. Now I worry about all of that. You know, everything is a million times more difficult when you've got kids. You're there trying to push against everything, trying to have a career, trying to do this. And if I hadn't had kids, well, Jesus, it would have been a lot easier. I mean, not that I'm saying I'd go back in time, but it would have been an awful lot easier. Everything's
Hope your
changed now.
kids can't
Everything.
hear you. I hope your kids can't hear you now. You know, that'd be awful.
I
Imagine
know.
your kids in the room sitting there going, "Mom doesn't want us anymore. She wants to go drinking and have holidays instead."
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'd swap them for a holiday by myself. Jesus. But no, I do. I definitely think just everything has changed and the whole landscape has changed. Women are having their careers first. They're getting married older. They're getting married later. They're
They're
starting
having, yeah,
families
they're
earlier
having their
than they
first
used to.
child when they're 32 or 33 or something. Yeah.
Exactly. So then they're only having maybe one child.
Bit
And then
selfish,
they're
isn't it?
every
It's a bit selfish
well,
of
I
you
know
lot.
I don't think it's selfish to just have one kid. I've heard people saying that before. I think that's a strange thing to say, that having one kid is selfish. It's not
No,
selfish at
I'm
all.
not
It's
saying, I'm
everybody's choice.
just, I'm, no, I'm saying it's selfish of you lot, you women, you know, not to be continuing on mankind. Sorry, personkind. Not to be continuing on mankind. Because, like, it's your duty. I'm sorry, and I know this sounds fierce sexist, right? And I don't want it to come across as sexist, but no matter what way I say it, it's going to sound sexist. But it's your job to have children. We can't have them. I can't have a child. Well, there are some men out there claim they can, but they can't. Let's be clear about it.
That's a very old-fashioned,
No, it's
archaic view
not. No,
there,
it's
Niall.
not.
It's
It's a
not your job. It's
biological
not our
fact.
job.
It is your job. It is. I
No.
mean, it's a biological fact that you can have children. I can't have children. But you can. So you have a duty, like most of the women in the world, to go out there and continue the population going. You have a
No,
duty.
no.
Okay,
No, it's not.
so let it,
Absolutely
okay, so
not.
every woman then has the same attitude. Then that's the end of civilization. That's just it then.
No, everybody has a choice. And every woman has a choice. I don't think that they felt like they did before. I think everybody felt it was their duty, but now we're realizing it's not actually our duty. We don't have to have kids. So look, just we'll see what happens. But I mean, it's now a case
But you
where we need
did. You had
to.
four, and you're delighted. You know what I mean? You're thrilled. You know what I mean? You're a mother, and you love your kid. Well, okay, you
Yeah,
love
I know, but if.
you
But
love your kids.
if someone decided not to have kids, that's their choice, you
No,
know?
that's fine.
And
Well, there was always the odd one or two who didn't want to have kids, and that's fine too. That, you know, that's life. You know, but what I'm saying is, if every woman figured it wasn't her duty in life, you know, to bear children, and I know I'm getting a bit biblical here, right? And I'm not religious
yeah,
at
a bit
all.
biblical, all right,
Yeah,
yeah.
well then the world would be doomed. I mean, there'd be no kids in the world.
We're not doomed, and it's never going to happen where there's no kids in the world. It's just now,
Look at
instead
the
of looking at replace.
Japanese. Look at the Japanese. There's no children being born. No relationships anymore. There would be no population. They don't even have immigration, so I don't know what they're going to do. There'll be no population in Japan, you know, in 100 years' time. Be no one. Be gone.
But it's not, that's a very blanket statement. Not everybody's not having children. Some people are having children, just less people are having children.
1.3 or 1.4. That's what yous are having. It's not
Well,
even
it's
two.
about looking.
It's a bit of a
It's
kid.
about looking now, instead of looking for replacement, it's about looking at how to maintain economic growth with what we have now and with the numbers that we have moving forward, rather than worrying about women going out and doing their job and having kids like a good woman, you know?
But
That's what we need to do.
no, not like a good woman. There's been lots of research into this, right? And Solis did their research back in 2017, which I mentioned all the time. I think it was 2017. They were there before Intrio came along. And they asked women, if we gave you the same amount of money and you could stay at home and raise your children, would you? Yes, they all said, yes. If they could make the same amount of money. So it shouldn't be about money. Family is important. Children are important. I'm not saying go back to the 1950s where we all had 10 kids and three of them or two of them died or something from malnutrition. I'm not suggesting that, you know, but we are in a better world. We've more sanitation. Kids, you know, the mortality rate is, you know, much better now when it comes to children. So, I mean, get out there and have a few.
I just can't argue with you, but I totally disagree.
We're doomed. Well, I
We're
mean,
not doomed, Niall.
we are. I mean, we are. Look, the population of Ireland is increasing, but you know why it's increasing. There's only one reason why the population of Ireland is increasing. And it's not because Irish people are having babies. Because more of them, unfortunately, are not having children. And the problem is now as well that you've also got legalised abortion. I can't fail to mention that. That's 10,000 valid terminations or pregnancies that are terminated every single year in Ireland. It's one in six babies gone before they even get a chance. So, by the way, I'm not coming from a pro-life perspective or a pro-choice perspective. I'm just saying it's a fact that there's 10,000 gone immediately. Potential babies.
Yeah, but potential babies that were going to be born into maybe not the best start or not the best lives, or you know,
look at me. I wasn't
women
wanted.
Yeah, no, I know, but that's you're not the same as everybody else. You know,
you're supposed to put on a sad face. You're supposed to go
It doesn't always work out. It doesn't always work out like that, you know. And it is all just at the end of the day, it's just about the women having choices and having autonomy over their bodies, you know. And for by saying like it's their job to go out and have babies and they, you know, they shouldn't.
But
be
whose job
abortions.
Is it then?
Well,
whose job? Whose job is it to have babies?
It's no one's job. It's no one's job. No one's. It's no one's absolute, you know, sole thing that they have to do in their life. It's no one's job. It's no one's job.
Well, it's certainly not mine. It's my job, obviously. You know, as a man, obviously, I have a duty as well. And my duty, obviously, is to help, you know, conceive that child. And men are quite happy to do that part of it. But it's we can't have the baby. I mean, if we could have babies, we'd help yous out. You know what I mean? We'd have one or two ourselves. But we can't.
No, yous wouldn't. Absolutely not. Yous would not.
But on a serious note, we're in trouble. We are in trouble.
If the tables were turned and men had to go through what women do and give up what women have to give up, we would have much more of a population issue than we do right now, let me tell you. If it was down to men. A million times over.
But what about the world we live in now? I mean, I don't want to get into a men-women argument. And by the way, I personally believe both sexes are equally as valuable in this world. We both have our roles to play and we're very valuable. We both bring the same amount to the table. I'm not in any way a sexist. I think women are extremely valuable. And I think men are extremely valuable. The world that we live in was built by men and women, by the way. Some people like to think it was built by just men. Women were there to support men. Women were there, you know, to do all the things that women do and nurture and care and, you know, hospitals, healthcare, all those kind of things that women seem to be much better at than men. And then there are men who are much better at certain things like construction, for example. There are very few women working construction. So we have our roles to play. And part of that role is continuing mankind and continuing human beings on this planet and going out and impregnating women for men and women having babies. That's part of the yeah. whole life cycle, isn't it? But you're just not doing it anymore.
Yeah, it is. You could put it like that, that it's part of the cycle like that. But I do think that women have an option. Women have a choice. You don't have to do it. You can do it at different points in your life. And it's just going to be a natural change in the cycle of how the population is growing. And I just think that we're just going to have to accept that, that women have a choice now. Women have more opportunities now. And it's just, yeah, it just is what it is. I think.
But I want women to have those opportunities too. But there are women, I believe, who are taking those opportunities because they feel they should, because they've been told they should. I do believe, I mean,
also,
I know stay-at-home women who said they almost feel ashamed of staying at home.
Yeah, there is that. There is that sort of stigma attached to staying at home. There is also now the worries of the cost of living and stuff and the, you know, I can't afford to buy a house and people are feel like they can't have children because they can't afford it. And, you know, that was not something that was on my mind when I first started having my kids. It certainly wasn't on my mind. But now, I mean, it's a massive issue now.
I know. And it's difficult because you're working and you've got to look after four kids, which is yourself and your husband. He's working too. You're kind of like ships in the night meeting sometimes, I'm probably sure. And it's really difficult. But by the way, that again is the fault of feminism, because feminism started this and then the government took it and, you know, embraced it with both hands, because now they have two taxpayers in a house and not just one anymore. And of course, then our lifestyle has increased, you know, what the cost of living, not just the cost of living, but all the extra bills we have, mobile phones, Netflix, satellites, two cars in the garden, extra holiday far and abroad. We didn't have all of those things 50 years ago. So we've more bills now than we ever had before to pay for. And that requires somebody else to work in a house. So we've socially constructed this idea where two people I'm not genuinely not being sexist. It doesn't matter whether a man or a woman stays at home, but two people have to be working. We've socially constructed that now. And governments are delighted because both of you are paying tax. All right, I suppose to one of the more serious stories of the week, Henry Nowak. And somebody had mentioned this story to me going back about 6 weeks ago, but I didn't really know very much about it because it was kind of below the radar, obviously because of sub judice and it was in court. And this is an 18-year-old man who was walking home, minded his own business. He was set upon by a Sikh and his friends, stabbed five times. The police were called. The police arrived and treated him like the perpetrator and the murderer like the victim, because the murderer claimed that he had been racially abused and attacked. I mean, it's quite a shocking story. What made it worse was, so the murderer gets, what was his name again? Oh, Vikram Digwa. He got 21 years, I think, minimum. He got life sentence, 21 years to be served minimum. I think they should put him away for longer, but however. And now they release the body cam footage from the cops. And it is horrific that they watch this man die, begging them to look after him, that he couldn't breathe. He said he couldn't breathe nine times. He was basically bleeding out, but not externally, internally into his own lungs. He then told them that he'd been stabbed, and the cop's answer, he kind of flippantly remarked, "I don't think so, mate." Meanwhile, protecting the murderer and asking the murderer, was he okay and was he hurt? I mean, it's the most shocking, heartbreaking story ever. Look, the cops have been accused of racism, or reverse racism, if that's what you want to call it, because as now it seems, according to the Houses of Parliament and according to the British police, there is a policy where you kind of believe the ethnic minority before you believe the white British person. Do you think that's genuinely the case?
So I don't know. It's so hard to say. I know Nigel Farage has come out and said that he thinks it's two-tier policing. So where it's one rule for one and another for another. They're calling now for intellectual responsibility. So when police arrive to a scene, they have to actually assess the scene and what's going on and listen to everything that's happening and make an assessment then and take a responsibility for that, rather than believing the first person that says something to them. So the first thing that they heard was it was a racial incident, a racial attack. And that is what they believed. And so no matter how many times Henry had told the police that he had been stabbed or that he couldn't breathe, They didn't believe him. They didn't believe him. And when he said he was stabbed, he was like, "Oh, we'll see about that." Or we'll.
I don't think so, mate. Yeah, I don't think so, mate.
Yeah. It was horrific. And then to see what actually happened then, it was absolutely heartbreaking. I think that a lot of people are saying that the pendulum has swung too far the other way, sort of coming on from the case of like Stephen Lawrence or George Floyd in America. And the pendulum has swung too far the other way. And It's like they're afraid. They're afraid to come across this as racist. They have to act on reports of racism.
This is what John McGurk was saying to me during the week when we were talking about it on the air at the time. And John was saying, when you're a cop or a guard or whatever, and you arrive at a scene and there's an ethnic minority there, you're not going to use, you know, excessive force, for example. You'll use excessive force on John or from Cherry Orchard or Ballymun, because nobody really cares, which is a horrible thing to say and think about. But if you use excessive force on somebody who might be Nigerian or from Afghanistan or Pakistan or India, all of a sudden you've got an NGO in your back and a possibility of losing your job. And they're erring on the side of caution when it comes to people who are ethnic minorities.
Exactly. Yeah.
When it comes to minorities, but not to kind of white indigenous people.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot to be said for that, and I do think that had a lot to do with what happened. And it's almost like, yeah, they're afraid because they will get in trouble. There will be absolute uproar if there's racial attacks, and somebody gets hurt from that, and they didn't react properly. So it's so transpired that then the white boy didn't get listened to. Nobody listened to him. And even when they arrived at the scene, it wasn't like they arrived to something that was terribly heated or there was violence taking place. Like it was generally calm. There was a lot of time for them to make an assessment. So for that to be how it went is just, it's really quite difficult to kind of fathom and understand, because there was a lot of time for them to be able to go and assess the situation. Nobody was in danger at that time. No one was being attacked. So I just cannot understand how this was the outcome. And it's absolutely tragic, horrific and heartbreaking. All of the footage that I've seen, honestly, I wish I hadn't seen it, but it is, it's
You can't
really, really
un yeah,
quite
I know you can't
harrowing.
unsee it. And
Can't unsee it, yeah.
the last words he heard was that he was being arrested, and they read him his rights. And probably the last words he heard was, "You have the right to remain silent." And what's really more harrowing was when they put the handcuffs on him. That picture now is going viral on the internet of his face down and the handcuffs and his hands behind his back. His hands are white, so all the blood had gone from his body at that stage internally inside, you know, his lungs or wherever it was. There was no blood left in his system. And
I mean, could they not feel he was cold? I mean, there's so many warning signs there that it just, nothing was done about it. And I just feel like, I don't know, it's just, this is going to be a watershed moment, I feel.
Do you think the cops should go to jail? Do you think they should be prosecuted? Now, there were three cops, I believe, involved. We only ever really see two in the video, but I believe there was three. There was a third one. But do you
One
believe?
has resigned for sure. One has definitely resigned. I can't say whether or not what I think should happen. There's going to be an investigation now anyway.
But if
the
that was
police are
your,
going to do
when you
their.
say you can't say, if that was your son, would you want the cop prosecuted?
I would want the cop prosecuted, and I now in this case would like the cop to be prosecuted. But I don't know what is going to be the outcome from the investigation or how they're going to proceed with it. I would like to see that happen. But again, there would have to be
Do
a
you think
proper.
he's guilty of something, or is it just one of those things? You arrive on the scene, you've seconds to make a decision, you make the wrong
You've made the
decision,
wrong decision.
and unfortunately, that's human error. Is that just human error, or is that was it consciously made? That's what you have to decide. Did he consciously make a decision to ignore the white boy, so to speak, and listen to the black guy because that's what his policy tells him to do? Is it because if that's the case, then he's guilty.
Yeah, and I just think, yeah, like we were saying, that there's a fear of doing something wrong when it comes to race. And there wasn't that underlying fear of looking after the white boy who's not the minority, you know. And yeah, I don't know. I would like to see what happens, what comes from the investigation. The police are doing an internal investigation. They're calling for there to be external investigations as well. And then to see what the outcome from that is. But yeah, it's a really, really difficult situation. It's a really difficult one to call. But I definitely, like I say, think it's going to be a watershed moment. And it's going to change how they do training, how they're taught to deal with situations. I think there's going to be major changes now moving forward.
And on top of that, I see Nigel Farage is now, I'm just looking at the story here, sorry, I did have it on my phone. And Nigel Farage is now suing the BBC
They
because
misquoted him.
they misquoted him. Yeah, they said, the BBC said that he said white, he called on Britons to demonstrate white cold rage. That's not what he said.
He
He
didn't.
said he said pure cold rage. And now
Pure
he's
cold
suing
rage,
the, yeah, he's suing the BBC, or, well, his solicitors have been onto the BBC saying they're going to sue them, they want an apology. And rightly so, because they're two completely different meanings. I mean, this is the
Oh, yeah.
BBC, of course, once again. You know, we're already in trouble, probably going to end up paying billions to Donald Trump. And now they're, you know, that maybe they'll end up paying a few quid to Nigel Farage as well there. I mean, look, I understand what Nigel, people are kind of giving out about Farage the other night, basically saying that he was encouraging, you know, these kind of mini riots that happened in Britain that night or the other night. But, you know, I mean, he's not telling anybody. It's not a call to action. It's not a call to violence. He's just unhappy about it. He's enraged about it, like most people would be. And he's quite entitled to air his view. If people take that up wrong or interpret that wrong, he can't be responsible for the head cases in society. I don't think so, anyway.
I do kind of think it could be, despite the fact that it was misquoted, but what he did say could definitely be misconstrued, telling people, you know, you should be enraged about this, more or less.
Well, you should be. People should be enraged about it. They're absolutely. Why shouldn't they be? I mean, I'm
There's a
enraged
lot
about it,
of,
and I don't even live in England.
I know, there is a lot of room, I think, though, for misunderstanding of that, of what he said. But
I don't
it's.
agree with JJ because I'm not going to run out and start a fight or start burning the cops or throwing things at them or anything because I'm not that type of person and I wouldn't interpret it that way. He's basically saying you should be enraged by this, and we should be as a society. We should be very upset with the way the British police treated that individual. The same way as if that policy stands here in Ireland, I don't know whether it does or not. But generally speaking, cops are human beings. Garda Síochána are human beings, and if they go into and they err on the side of caution, that could happen, or something like that could happen here too. And we should be outraged about by that, because everybody, no matter whether you're Jack from Nigeria or Danny from Ballyfermot, you should be treated in the law exactly the same way. There should be no difference in the treatment that you're given. None.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. It's just such a minefield when it comes to underlying racism, institutional racism, because that's what happened, wasn't it, with the back in 1993 with Stephen Lawrence. It was found that the Met Police they were classified as institutionally racist.
Yeah.
And you've got a long history of that. And now they're trying to undo that and come away from that image and come away from that.
But they've gone too far.
Gone too far. And yes, people are enraged and people are really angry and people are really upset, and they were out protesting and rioting, I suppose, the other night.
That's not the answer. That's not really the answer either. And no more than that was the answer when the whole George Floyd thing happened. People destroyed their own neighbourhoods and looted their own shops and set fire. That's really going to bring George back now, setting fire to your local Walmart. You know what I mean? I mean, that's nonsense, that kind of behaviour. And the same would apply in England as well. But hopefully there'll be a good outcome to it. When I say a good outcome, the only outcome, obviously you can't bring Henry back, but the only outcome would be a change in policy and a statement from the British police saying they've made a huge mistake and they're changing their policy.
Yeah. You know, and I think not only that as well, knife laws and getting knives off the street. I don't know what will work in that respect. I don't know if these knife amnesties that they've been having in the UK, I don't know if they're any good. I don't know if they're working. It's basically where there's bins police stations. And it's, Does it do any good?
Pat O'Tobin, and I like Pat normally, right? But he came out with this one, Bin the Blade, there yesterday, right? This is AIM2's Bin the Blade. And I'm going, is it like a knife amnesty? And I'm going, like, if you're Paddy and you have a knife and you're up to no good with it, you're not going to toddle on down to a Garda station or a police station and throw it into a bin. So if you really want to get rid of it, you just throw it away. Like, what? That doesn't even make sense to me. Nobody's going to bother doing that. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Yeah, it just sort of seems like it's like just they're just doing it for show. You know, that's what it feels like in the UK anyway.
All right. Now, speaking of the UK, and obviously you're in the UK, I'm in Ireland. But a lot of people are being encouraged to move out of Ireland. There's an expo in Croke Park in September, and it's an Australian jobs expo. There's another one then, I think, an American jobs expo and Canadian one on the way too. The grass is always greener on the other side, they say. More Irish people are leaving. Well, 70,000 Irish people left the country last year. And the numbers are actually up, and the amount of people are going, probably because of the cost of housing. That's part of it, I imagine. Better opportunities in other countries. Although, is the grass really greener? If you go to Australia, it's probably as expensive to buy a house in the city.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's as expensive. Yeah, I've had a friend that has just recently moved back from Australia. He was getting paid better over there, but I mean, the outgoings were absolutely ridiculous. They were much more than in Ireland. I've obviously moved back to the UK now. The outgoings here are a lot more. See, if you look at it on paper, you're like, oh, it'd be actually cheaper. It'd be cheaper to live in the UK. It's absolutely not. Because you've got the way I sort of put it is it's more expensive to exist in the UK than it is in Ireland, because before you go anywhere, the rents are higher. You've got council tax, you've got water rates, all of the bills, electricity and gas are more expensive in the UK. Whereas in Ireland, it's more expensive to go out for dinner or to go shopping. So,
well, I think our energy bills are higher than yours. I mean, I think they've proven it now that
on paper it says it is. In my actual experience, it's not more expensive in Ireland. It's more expensive in the UK for the bills.
Okay. Are you basing that on what you earn? In other words,
I'm just basing it on the actual physical cost. It's more expensive per month.
Yeah, because the average wage in the UK is lower than the average wage in Ireland. Always has been traditionally. But then again, the prices traditionally have always been cheaper in the UK, but they're not anymore. I mean, some stuff is, like some fresh vegetables and things like that can be a little bit cheaper. But generally speaking, your average grocery shop is probably in and around the same now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The groceries are in and around the same. Eating out is better over here. It's cheaper over here. Going to do anything is more expensive. So it's just, I heard when I was living in Ireland, I heard so many people say, oh, we're going to go to the UK, it's going to be so much better. I'm like, lads, it's not. It's really not. No. I find it more expensive living here. I'm earning more here, but it's more expensive. It's completely just evened itself out. So even though I'm earning more, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. And what about, have you ever thought about Canada, America, Australia? They're the three top ones, aren't they? People tend to go, or Dubai, I suppose, more recently. Although I don't think many people are going to Dubai at the moment.
I was literally just talking about Dubai earlier on. There are still people moving out there. I think they're mad. I absolutely think they're mad. Because anybody that I did know that moved out there in the last, let's say, 10 years, they've all come back. They've all come back.
What, because of what happened in Iran?
No, before that.
Oh, okay.
It's like it was like a sort of a short term thing. So everybody did like a year or two and then came back.
You can make a quick book. I think you can make a quick book in Dubai if you're a teacher or a nurse or whatever it is, and you go out there and make a quick book and come back and have enough for a deposit for a house. But Australia is a bit more long term in America and Canada. Forget about the price. Would you like to live in one of those countries?
Oh, yeah, I would like to. Yeah, I'd love to live in America. I'd love to live in America. Absolutely love it. But I think with the politics now, it's kind of put me off.
Why? Do you not like Trump? Yeah, I thought you liked Trump.
No, I don't. I don't like or dislike him. I have to question. Don't bring him into this. Anyway, I'm not going to talk to you about Trump. I do think that with some of the politics over there at the moment, I just think it just strikes me that the place is just in turmoil. But I definitely just think this grass is not always greener on the other side. It's just, there's definitely more opportunities like in the UK and that, you know, in London and stuff. But I don't know. It's all just a pipe dream, really. And moving country is an absolute nightmare as well. Like just the physical moving and the cost of moving. So it's not reality.
The other story there was Cynthia Nimuracu. I don't know how the hell, by the way, she became an MEP. I have no idea. Anyway, she's the Fianna Fáil MEP, and she's talking about now, she's called for novice driver curfews and a rollout of AI cameras that'll find people who use their own mobile phones or don't wear a seatbelt. These are the new cameras now that can actually tell if you're holding a phone or you're using a phone, AI cameras. And a curfew. Let's focus on the curfew. Do you think novice drivers, learner drivers, novice drivers are not learners, are they? They're the ones who got their license and already have a license. They're on an N or an L, or N in the UK, it's OR in the South.
OR. So I don't know about this. I mean,
N in the Republic of Ireland. Sorry, it's N in the Republic of Ireland, yeah.
I don't know. I only know an L plate.
No, you get the L plate, you do your test, and then you have to have an N plate for a year after you get your license.
I did mine so long ago, I don't even know. So is that what it is?
Yeah, they might as well just call it, I would have just called it a T plate. Tick. You know what I mean? Like, it's more or less saying you're a dope. Like, you know, you've got your license, but you're still a bit tick. So, you know what I mean? For a year or so. But she wants a curfew. So I imagine like 9 o'clock, you're not allowed out after 9 o'clock at night or when it gets dark.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it's novice drivers, new drivers and young drivers that are the ones that statistically are more likely to cause accidents. And it's especially nighttime driving as well, isn't it? So is it not a good idea?
No, well, I mean, we were all young once. I mean, you remember when you learned to drive first, would you like someone to have told you, listen, you can go out, but you're not allowed to take your car out after it gets dark?
No, I wouldn't have liked it. But if
no, see, we have to learn sometime. How are you going to learn?
I know, but it's about combating these figures going in the wrong direction, because they are going in the wrong direction. Like the incidents on Irish roads, it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
They're not getting much better in the last few years. We've kind of plateaued in and around the 150 to 200 deaths on the road, right? But here's the thing. We have, God knows, I mean, if you go back to the 1980s, right, where we had probably 600,000, I'm not even that, 300,000 or 400,000 cars on the road. We had over 3,000 or 4,000 deaths every year. Mm-hmm. Now we have 2.something million cars on the road, and we only have 180 deaths on average every year. That figure is never going to be zero, unless cars become autonomous and perfect. That figure is never going to be zero. When you've got 2 million pieces of ton or steel weighing a ton flying around on roads, they're bound to hit each other at some point. Somebody's going to make a mistake. It's a human error. People make mistakes.
I understand that, but we still have to try and make the roads safer. We can't just say, oh, look, we're never going to get it down to zero. Sure, it's grand. It's 180.
No, I'm not saying it's grand. Make them safer. But if you keep stopping people from doing things, they'll never learn.
What about using the AI thing? I think that's a great idea to catch people on their phones, because that's the kind of behavior on the roads that's causing accidents, is people distracted, people not paying attention, and then people not wearing their seatbelts. So the AI cameras to try and catch people out using their phones and that, I think that's an absolutely great idea, because it's not like you're bringing in new rules. It's just you've got more ability to be able to catch people breaking those rules. So I think that's a great idea,
Have you ever
and
used
I
your
think
mobile
that should be
phone when
one
you're
of those.
driving? Truthful.
I have done, and it's something that I would never do now. Never, never, never,
No,
never.
I haven't done it in years. I did when, obviously, years and years ago, I did when Bluetooth wasn't a big
Yeah.
thing.
Oh yeah,
I
sure. I used
did.
to sit there talking on my phone. I got caught one time by the guards,
But
like
I've
years
seen
ago.
people texting. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see it all the time. It makes me so angry that that's why I really think it's a great idea to bring out the AI cameras and catch people on their phones, distracted, not wearing their seatbelt. I'm not so sure about the thing, because the other thing as well is stopping young people driving, especially in rural areas. They rely on their cars. They can't go anywhere without driving. And then I think it really is just the speed thing then. Drivers, single vehicle collisions. And that's just purely speed, because
I don't know.
you're the only.
I think speed makes accidents worse, without a shadow of a doubt. But there's been lots of research into this. And, you know, it's not speed that causes the accident. It's bad driving that causes the accident. I mean, there's nothing wrong. And I'm not suggesting anybody go out and do this, but there's nothing wrong at doing 120 miles an hour at 4 o'clock in the morning on a motorway that's dead straight. Okay, if you're a good driver. But there is something wrong with doing 120 miles an hour on a motorway if it's pissing raining at 7 o'clock in the evening. Do you understand? So it's bad judgment, bad driving. They're the things that get people killed. So it's not the actual speed itself. It's people who are reckless and careless and don't know when to speed.
No,
I'm
absolutely.
actually a slow driver now.
It's not the speed, but it's if some of these vehicles aren't driving at such speeds, then the injuries wouldn't be as bad. So, if you're going to get hit by a car at 20 miles an hour compared to getting hit by a car at 80 miles an hour, you'll probably be killed if someone's driving at 80 miles an hour. But at 20 miles an hour, you'd probably get away just being injured. And I think that's what the speed thing is because the speed is actually killing people. Yes, the bad driving is causing it, but if you're not driving at such speeds, then there's not going to be quite so much of a fallout from it.
But
Do you
statistically,
know what I
most
mean?
I know and I agree. And statistically, most people, by the way, are killed. Usually, I'm not on motorways, and they're usually killed on, you know, back roads in the middle of Donegal somewhere, which is
Yeah.
Donegal has the worst record, unfortunately, because you know the roads are so bad up to Letterkenny and up around that area. So it's these kind of back roads, twisty roads with bad, dangerous bends. They're the roads that kill people. So that's just down to experience, because people, young people in particular, don't know the roads very well. Anyway. On a final note, and I suppose a fun note, in case we're missing anything else, if we're missing anything, please tell me. I see this article here. Female fun tax. Women to spend 10 million hours in summer festival toilet queues, according to research. The long time spent
Yeah, the
waiting for the
long.
toilet. Oh, what's that? It's good here. The long time spent waiting for toilets has been dubbed the female fun tax. Women will waste an estimated 10 million hours queuing for toilets at festivals this summer, according to the creator of the UK's world's first women's urinals, dubbed the female fun tax. How do they make a women's urinal? It says women's urinals.
I'm not sure. I think that you'd have to use a thing to make it like you have a willy.
Yeah,
Then
like a shiwi, is that they call them a shiwi?
yeah, the shiwi thing. I don't actually know how that would work, but I mean, I think this is overstating the problem. I go to festivals quite often, and yes, I do have to spend quite a while, quite some time standing in queues for the toilets. But you have a laugh in the toilet. You make friends when you're queuing up for the toilet. Like, I mean, I think this is just a marketing thing for whoever this is. They're making it a bigger problem than it is. I'm calling it a fun tax. It's like you have to go to the toilet. Women spend longer in the toilet anyway. Do you know?
But
I go, like,
they have been used, these new toilets have been used more than a million times since 2022, cutting queues at dozens of events like Glastonbury, Shambhala, to Pride events and to the Download Festival. The British Bristol-based startup research shows that women on average queue for an hour per day at festivals. These women should be out enjoying the amazing event they paid to attend, not missing the headliner while they queue for the toilet. So these new women's urinals, they must be urinals. They must be like a
Yeah.
me urinals are disgusting things anyway, the best of times.
I know. They'd be stinking. They'd be absolutely stinking.
I imagine it's like a urinal, but obviously the bottom part comes out further. If you, do Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to work out
that
the
might be what
biology.
it is. Yeah, that might be how it works. I don't know.
And you
I
just
don't know.
kind of
I'm
go
looking
over,
up
you do
that.
a bit of a John Wayne on it. You know what I mean? We
Yeah, I
are.
know. It would be all over your jeans and everything. You'd be soaked. You'd be all covered in piss.
We had, how could you do it? You'd have to take your cacks off, like, completely.
Yeah, I
Because
don't
you
know.
couldn't
But
take
like, I
her.
mean,
No, no.
are they still in cubicles or what? Like,
No, I don't think so.
I personally just don't have that much of an issue with queuing to go to the actual Jack's. So I'm grand. I don't need to use one of these, but I'll look it up and see what it's like, or I'll let you know after I've been to a festival during the summer. I'm going to Leeds Festival in August, so I'll check it out.
And what it means that, like, men, you'd have to piss in front of each other. Would that bother you?
No, not really. Because I go to the toilet with my friends anyway, but I don't know. I just think it'd be
But
stinking. I just think it'd be rank.
that's a bit of a woman
Just,
thing, isn't it? Are you coming to the
yeah.
toilet? Yeah, okay.
I know.
Now,
I know.
when you bring it, you know when you say to your mates, you know you're in a nightclub somewhere and you're at the table having a few drinks and you go, "Oh, I need to go to the toilet. Are you coming?" Yeah, okay. And you all get your bags and off you all go like ticks, right? And what happens is everyone's afraid not to go because if you don't go, you know that I'll be talking about you. Anyway, so when you go into the toilet, right? I'm assuming you all don't go into the cubicle together.
Sorry, say that again.
I assume you all don't go into the cubicle together.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you do. We do. We go into the cubicles together.
For what?
Just, I don't know. Especially if there's a queue, you'll all go into the one toilet because you've been standing in the queue. And then, like, let's say two or three of you go into the cubicle and then you all go and then you leave.
And
Because
what? So
if you don't want to miss the queue.
if three of yous are in the cubicle together,
Yeah.
what, you like take
Yeah.
turns?
Yeah. Go for a wee. Yeah.
And you're just chatting away while you're weeing to the other one, like.
Yeah. So we do wee
Somewhere.
in front of each other. Yeah.
That's weird. But here's the thing, right? I hate men's toilets. I don't know who invented them, who come up with the idea of a urinal. It's the most, we're teaching young boys from a young age to piss against a wall. I just
Yeah,
think that's
that's true.
horrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They should be using cubicles for hygiene reasons. Like, these things are
Yeah.
disgusting. The worst I ever came across was a nightclub. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was up near Rat Mine somewhere. I worked at it years ago, right? And you went into the men's toilet, and there was like a bar that you would tie a horse onto, you know, the kind of bar like that, right? And that was on the
Yeah.
ground in the middle. I think that was to kind of hold onto. And on the ground was a grate. Like a big
Ugh.
10 foot long by 4 foot wide grate. You stood there
Ugh.
and you just pissed on the floor.
Oh, that is
And
disgusting.
all these lads are standing around just peeing on the floor like. And then it obviously goes down a channel and into like something. But like just pissing on the floor. And there was wee all over the grate and you're standing in other people's wee and I go, this is
That's it is
disgusting. It's
absolutely just
inhumane.
it is disgusting. There was a place in Mullingar. There was a pub in Mullingar that I used to go to with my ma when I was a kid. We used to go and visit friends of the family, and the men just used to go to the back door of this pub and just piss out it, just piss out the door, just open the
What?
door and just piss out, just piss out.
Like, women give out that we're like animals, that we act like animals, but we're being treated like animals. And so if we're being
Yeah,
treated like
especially
animals, so why
pissing
would
into
you
a
act like?
grate.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you once again. We shall talk to you again next week at the same time. Hopefully, we won't have the same technical problems we had earlier on, but nobody heard them
Yeah,
because
lots
I
of
cut them all
technical
out.
problems
Yeah,
tonight.
you suddenly just appeared
Yeah.
with headphones on your head all of a sudden. We
Yeah.
sorted all that out anyway. Anyway, nobody heard it because I
Yeah.
edited all those bits out. I shall talk to you again next week, AJ. Have a good week.
Thanks, Niall. Thank you. Take care.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.